Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Welcome once again to Farming Aotearoa, a program where agricultural journalist Peter Burke brings us up to date with news from the rural sector, a sector which has and is still going through some hard times. Welcome, Peter.
Hello, Catherine. Well, we're into a period of May, and I suppose it's sort of autumn, and it's an R-type program today, believe it or not. I've managed to find all the R's possible in agriculture.
Yes, you have.
I know, and this was a pure coincidence. I didn't deliberately do this. It was sort of, you know, done at about 10 o'clock at night, and they all look like R's, so I've done that. So we're going to be talking recovery resignations, roadshows, rules, and we've got a few other bits and pieces as well, which I'm going to chuck in at the end.
Okay.
So we'll start off with recovery. And this is coming down to what's happening up in Tairāwhiti in Hawke's Bay. And had a great friend of mine who was the chairman of the largest Māori kiwi fruit growing operation in New Zealand. And that organisation is Ngāi Tukarangi. They're based at Matapehi up in Tauranga. But they have got a tremendous number of orchards in Hawke's Bay. And they were badly damaged. They've got 4 kiwi fruit and I think 5 apple orchards from memory in that region. I remember seeing those apple orchards not long after Gabriel came through, and they were a mess. Mm. But what is wonderful is that Rarihi is an incredible individual, one of the great CEOs or chairman I've ever met. And he is just really so concerned about people. He gets people on side. Mm. Once you've got people on side, the whole thing starts to fit in. And but that cost him, that cyclone cost him about $25 million, which is massive if you think about it. But that gives you some idea of size. They're very, very big.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've managed to get things back on track. And what's quite amazing is they've had a good season. So what we're seeing in Hawke's Bay has been a good season for fruit generally. And the trees that were damaged and the vines that were damaged, most have come back quite well. And there is a crop, if you like. It isn't the biggest crop. But it's a good crop. It's good quality crop. That's what they're telling me, that you know, we're getting good apples. There's not too many bad ones around. And also the good news is too, they're getting labour along. They've got people to pick the crop, which is important, and good pickers. So there mightn't be the yield there, but certainly there's the quality there. Interesting enough, talking to Rarihi, I said, what's your actual yield? He said, well, it's about 75% of what we'd expect to have done. But they have a thing with kiwi fruit. If you get your kiwi fruit really early, they call it early start, then you get a premium for that. And they've been able to cash in on that premium, and therefore their value has increased. So they've got a lower yield of over their total orchards, but and their volumes are down, but the prices they're going to get for their kiwi fruit will be compensate for that, which is great for them. And he's saying that, you know, that they're doing quite well. The orchard that I went to at the time, Puketapu, was very badly damaged. It was right beside a stop bank, and when I was there, must have been about 8 or 9 months ago, they were still repairing the stop bank. They've cleared that up now. They've put in the infrastructure back, so all the poles are out and been replaced again, and they're now starting to look at replanting those vines. But that will be a 7 or 8 year project before they get those on stream again.
Yeah.
So people sort of think about it's not like having a patch of cabbages destroyed, you could plant them a year later.
Yeah.
This is a long term hit, this stuff. So his words to me was, you know, we're doing all right, amazing. We've done some good things with these orchards, but the money that they've also got a grant from government, which has helped them. They've got a $12 million loan there. That will go towards repairing some of that orchard, but also repaying some of the money they've already spent of their own to get things going. So they're coming back. His comment to me was something quite nice. I'll read it to you. I think it's like we think we're out of the deep end. We're now swimming in the shallows and getting out of the pool of depression, which I thought was quite a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
So they were a very, very good operation. I just like to see what they're doing. They're a Māori group, but they're very positive. They think intergenerationally, as we know, and they're doing this for the future. So they've got a double incentive. But again, I reiterate the point about Rarihi and Ngāi Tukarangi is they're very people-focused. They've got beautiful accommodation for their people, the RSE workers. It's really spot on. It's beautiful. So,
well, I tell you, if they are supplying the kiwi fruit at the moment, I have just been buying a ton of it because it's beautiful. Mm. It's absolutely superb.
It is. It's great. And it's I think really that's nice. We're seeing that right across the country. There's only been one place. I'll talk about it now, actually. We'll jump onto that one. Up in Tarawhiti in Gisborne, that's where they had a problem with kiwifruit. Some of the orchards, the kiwifruit orchards there, suffered quite bad damage from the cyclone. One of the problems with that and with apples, of course, was what they call wet feet. In other words, their vines are underwater. They need to breathe. And they got badly damaged. And some orchards, I gather, in Tarawhiti, kiwifruit orchards, lost about 30% of their vines. They just withered and died.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to be pulled out and replaced. And we're still seeing that in Hawke's Bay. We're still seeing, you know, you go around, drive around the district, and what you've got to look is you see these great shelter belts. But I keep saying to people, don't look at the shelter belts. Stop and go behind them and see what's happening there, because that's where you'll see what is really happening in these places. You know, they're protected, I guess, from the road for good reason, not to stop prying eyes like others, but that's an issue. But talking to the chairman of Horticulture New Zealand, Dr. Barry O'Neill, is a very, very good operator and one that's been around the sector for a long time. He's a kiwifruit grower himself, so he knows the sector very well, and he's had a stellar career in the industry. He's saying, he was saying, that the growing season has been good this year. It's the first year for about two or three they've had a really good season. The yields are down, but the quality is good. Same mixture. That's looking nationwide now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that, again, labour issues, which have been a problem that's dogged somewhat the horticulture sector, a lower crop means they've got probably a bit of extra labour, and the people picking it are better, so they're not being the fruit's not being rushed off the vines, if you like.
Okay.
And that first year around COVID, there was a problem, and people just picked it because they had to get it off.
Right.
And the quality was poor. And that caused problems overseas. So what he's saying is that, take an example, Kumara, for example, were a problem. We know that Dargaville was badly hit. That's the main area for Kumara. Now they've had a reasonable crop this year too. Not as big as they would like, but still it's a good crop. And the quality of the vegetables is great. I've had some myself. It's lovely. I love Kumara. To me, is, you know, it's more important than fish and chips to me. And that's and whatever you might other beverage you might have to go with that. But anyway, we won't talk that today. It's also agricultural, of course. But what he's saying again is that, you know, with the crop, people will probably be able to pay the bills for producing this particular crop, which is good, but it will still not get into this issue of the debt which they've incurred as a result of getting back on their feet. And that it will be there probably for, who knows, you know, 7, 8, 10 years potentially. So there's a long way to go with that. And, you know, the debt of Gabriel will be with Hawke's Bay and Tarawhiti for a long, long time to come. The other thing that a comment that has been made, and it's just, this is not trying to get not to get too political, but we are seeing a lot of interest, a lot of happiness around the farming sector, generally about the new government, of their attitude. And I'm not saying the others are bad, simply there is a difference. The farming people see National as being, they're a farmers' party. That's where the origins come from. They go back to being a farmers' party, evolved into National over the years. And therefore, they're more empathetic and sympathetic, if you like, to the farmer. And the problem with farmers was that they felt that there was just an avalanche of regulation coming at them. They're seeing now the new government is making a bit more of a stand and saying, well, what do we need to do? What don't we need to do? And that sort of is something that is coming through in some of the conversations I'm having. For horticulture, one thing that's happening in the next week or so, there are three what we call industry good organisations, and they are funded by levy. So those are Dairy NZ for dairy, Beef and Lamb New Zealand for the sheep meat industry, red meat industry, and horticulture. And they and those growers and producers pay a percentage of their crop, whatever it might be, animals, to fund their organisations. And horticulture is going through a process at the moment of getting a vote to go back and say to the growers, will you fund us for another 6 years? So that vote is out now, or starting, I think, this coming week, we're on here, and that'll be a month for voters to say, yes, we'll continue to pay for you or not. There was one great hiccup in this, which I'll talk about in a minute, actually, was when the wool growers several years ago decided not to fund wool, and that was one of the stupidest decisions that farmers have ever made in this country, in my view. It was the dumbest decision possible, but They're paying the price for it now.
The consequences of it. The
consequences. So the industry good organisations, that's what we call them, they're the ones that sort of do the lobbying for the growers at a political level. They do some research work, and they do a pretty good job by and large. I mean, we can criticise everyone. Mm. Criticise me. I mean, I'm a bit of a whatever, however, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the hort side of it. So roadshows. The new government decided, mainly through Mark Patterson, who's an associate minister of agriculture, I think, for memory, New Zealand First, actually, and he and Todd McClay decided they wanted to go around the country and have meetings with farmers to brief them on what the coalition wanted to do around farming, but also to get some feedback from farmers about what they saw as being the issues. And also part of that was Mark Patterson's view, and a very honourable one, was to try and push for wool and see what could be done to try and get wool back on the agenda. And if we talk about that first, in a way, it's interesting because when I was a young journalist, it's quite a long time ago, when I was young.
Not that long ago.
Yeah, I suppose age is a number, but you know, maturity is another one. And probably, but the farmers decided they were not going to fund research into wool, and the Wool Board was abolished. That to me was crazy, because what's happened since then is there's been no money really put much into wool research. Nowadays, of course, we've got sheep, the wool, of course, wools that we've traditionally produced. It's almost it's costing them to shear. They're not getting much money for their wool. The move now is to try and see if we can do something with that. And the other week, Mark Patterson was in Australia at a conference in Adelaide. At the International Rural Textile Organisation, trying to see if there are ways of using that money, getting some traction to promote new innovative product out of wool, things for using acoustics and all sorts of things like that. So there was that push. However, going back to the road shows, I went to one of these, interesting one, a place called Fordell. It's somewhere between Palmerston and Whanganui, out in the country, but it was a wool shed. And you've never seen such a beautiful stage ever at all. All the speakers had to climb up a loading ramp as if they were a cattle beast and stand there and preach to the minions below them, quite a long way down. So they stood on the loading ramp and gave their speeches, which was rather beautiful to watch. And that was all about telling the farmers what they're doing and then asking for feedback. And it was quite interesting to hear what the farmers were talking about. Interest rates, obviously a big issue for these are mainly sheep and beefies. Water storage is big, you know, and also the allocation of that. Regulation is big. Climate change, the prediction of highly productive land is big with farmers, and that's something that's been, you know, quite concerning. And then the viability, of course, of hill country farms, in particular the viability of coarse wool, which we've talked about as being important. So they had about 100 people there at this thing, which was quite amazing. And we had Andrew Hoggart there, the Associate Minister of Agriculture. A great funny story, though. I should see the front page of Rural News this week. It's delightful. I should show it to you in the distance, but Andrew Hoggart is a patched Member of Parliament. He had poor Andrew, actually, it's true. It's not a joke. About 20 years ago, when he was playing rugby, he was in the front row, and some errant opposition decided that they would try and give him the treatment and punch him in the eye with their fist.
Oh, dear.
And 20 years later, that's come back to bite him, and he went to get an eye test, and suddenly they found a detached retina, and suddenly, within days, he was in hospital to get that repaired. So he's wearing a patch at the moment.
Ah.
So he's the only patch Member of Parliament at the moment. it's quite... But Andrew was very good in talking about the thing, and he... You know, what he's saying is that there's some absurdities around the present regulations. He quoted one example of a farmer up in Taranaki. He was told by the regional council, a sheep and beef farmer, that they had to fence 200 and something kilometres of their streams to make them regulatory safe around the environment.
This is for runoff, isn't it?
Yeah, runoff. And the farmer said, I won't use the words, but you know what I can think about. Anyway, what they did was they sold the farm to Forestry Institute, and it's just gone. It's gone to pines.
Now, that's not much of a benefit, is it?
What you're getting with some of these regulations in the past was perverse outcomes.
Because the farmer would have had, I'm assuming, some sort of a way that he was managing, or they were managing that anyway.
It wasn't causing. I mean, to be fair, they don't actually. There's some trials being done by Massey, which I've seen, And you don't find that sheep particularly will go into waterways and sort of, you know, go for swim.
I don't generally see them lolling about.
No, they don't. They don't sort of go for swims. And you don't see cattle. They just go there to drink. Sure, they might drop a bit there, but I mean, people forget there are ducks in Pūkeha Coast and all those other things that do it too. I think there's a bit of some of the, I won't mention the party, but it's a certain colour, and it's not orange, that have a perverse misunderstanding of what happens on farm. And that's what we got in the regulations from the previous lot, which, frankly, it's killed farming in many respects.
You were mentioning before about the environment. So farmers want the environment to be good, otherwise they can't farm.
Exactly. And their kids want to swim in the streams too. Don't forget that, you know. It's not like, and they want the eels there for their kids to catch too. So, you know, I think what was happening, I was talking to one of the people there, Kirsten Bryant, who was on the meat and beef and lambs board, very, very smart farmer, them up that way in Fordell. And she was just saying, you know, the regulations were just layer upon layer upon layer. We couldn't get through them.
Right.
And now what we're seeing from the new government is to try and say, okay, well, let's just see what is absolutely necessary. Also look at what the industry itself is doing. Now, we've got situations, say, in horticulture where there are some very good self-assurance programs run by the industry. And so do we need the government to set a whole bunch of bureaucrats in to set up a whole lot of other regulations to override that one, when in fact that one is doing a perfectly good job? So I think we're going to see a lot more of that sort of attitude coming along, where there's going to be an analysis of what's there, how good is it, can it be tweaked a little bit, but why spend a fortune on doing a completely revamp of that in government speak, which will take forever and never do anything anyway. We all know that. It'll go to every committee in the country and never come out the other end looking
good.
And lots
of consultants getting lots of money.
It'll be a shambles. But anyway, so that's what's interesting. So I think there are interesting challenges around the whole area of, you know, what's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that was my look at Fordell and at this roadshow. They're going on now, and the feedback, by all accounts, is very good. Good attendances, which you don't normally get at these things. Well, I wasn't expecting 100 people there.
Mm.
I thought there might be 30 or 40 there, but to get a big crowd of people there, the cars started rolling in, and it was a good. And then there was a beer and a sausage afterwards, and a chance to chat to Andrew and some of the other MPs locally were at the thing too. So there was a good chance to have a. And it was a fine afternoon too. Of course, it didn't rain. That was the good thing. If it had been the bullshit, it would have been a pretty awful day, I think. It wasn't not. You know, inside a woolshed, depending on the woolshed, can be good or
okay.
Be awful, put it crudely. You know.
So they're doing the roadshow for all...
Whole country, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so they're doing it for horticulture?
No, they're just doing it for sheep and beef.
Oh, just for sheep and
beef. It's mainly about wool. The focus has been, the idea was to try and do wool, but they've opened it up beyond that to the sheep and beef farmers, who most of whom are, you know, they're sheep and beef. They've got sheep. Therefore, wool is of interest to them. And therefore, that's what they're looking at, yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier one of the R's was resignations. What are those about?
Well, it's interesting. I talked about the industry good organisations, and in the last couple of weeks, we've seen two chief executives from those organisations, Beef and Lamb, Sam McIver, resigned, and just last week, Nadine Tunley from Horticulture announced her resignation. And about 6 months ago, Tim Mackle, who was head of Dairy NZ, also announced his resignation. So what we're going to see in the next few months is a complete new brand of CEO in all of those organisations, and probably new chair. There was a new chair in Beef and Lamb. That's Kate Acklin. It's likely that Jim Vanderpoel from Dairy NZ will step down. And Jacqueline Roeth, who's well-known, Professor Jacqueline Roeth, has been appointed the deputy chair, which means that she's likely to succeed Jim. What happens in horticulture, I don't know. What will probably happen is that until they will not change chair until they've had their new CEO's got a good 6 months in the job to work things out. They don't normally change chairs and CEOs at the same time. But that's unusual. And the people are asking the question, you know, why are they all gone? And I don't know the answer to that, but, and this is just hearsay, so there's no strong views on it, but all of those people have had to deal with some pretty difficult times. They've been through COVID, they've been through the cyclone episodes, lots of adverse weather events which have affected all of them. They've had, in the case of dairy and sheep and beef, they've had M. bovis along the way. So one, no doubt, you know, those people have been on at the sharp end of all that. They've had the responsibility to communicating with their members, to getting them into line, to liaising with the government to get things right so that the outcomes for their members are right, but at the same time the outcomes for the country are right too. And I think that those people have worked incredibly hard, and you know, if they deserve probably a break. I know that, for example, Tim Mackle left with no job to go to. He just wanted to get out.
Right.
And Nadine Tunley has said the same, that she hasn't got another job to go to. Sam McIver is different. He's taken up a role with Osprey, which is the organisation which runs the sort of traceability aspect of sheep and beef, and he has worked for them before, so it's not an unknown to him. He was there in a previous life at a lower down level, but he's now going to be their new chief executive. So that was interesting just to see what's happening. And I think there is a lot of people at the moment are quite tired. You know, it's been a pretty full-on few years. Mm. When you're in those sort of positions, you are at the beck and call of your members, you're at the beck and call of the government. You've got a lot of work to do. It's a lot of liaising, a lot of work to make sure everything fits in the right place and to get it right. And I really admire those people, what they've done. They've done a great job. Sam's a great guy. You know, Tim Mackle was great. Nadine, I haven't had quite so much to deal with. But certainly, you know, you can't fault any of them for that. So, yeah, they've done well.
Fantastic.
So that was sort of the resignation side of it. It's unusual.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, so you've got another R to talk about, and that's rules.
Rules.
I don't like rules so much.
I don't either, but the Canadians don't like them either.
Ah.
This is Canada stealing New Zealand money from New Zealand, basically.
What?
I know.
Those Canadians.
Canada's flagrant dishonesty is what I've thrown my story as this week.
Wow.
So it comes down to a thing called, I have to read this out because it's the Progressive Agreement on Trans-Pacific Partnership, called CPTPP, which is an agreement of countries in the sort of Pacific region. It's a trading organisation, group. And Canada is a member of that, as is New Zealand. And the deal is, that, of course, that you trade freely. But Canada says, no, not us. And cocked its nose at New Zealand dairy exports and won't take them. And it said that they will not accept, they're making it so impossible for us to, it's not worth it. Now that's cost us, New Zealand, they reckon about $120 million over a couple of years.
Mm.
So I could argue that Canada has stolen that from New Zealand. It's theft by their perverse attitude. It's interesting because Canada, you would think a big country, but their dairy industry is bizarre. It's almost primitive. Their herd size is 89, I think, average. Now, ours is 450.
Okay.
They've got about 10,000 farmers, so there are lots of little farmers there. But it seems that these little farmers have got big mouths and big egos and wield a lot of power, as farmers do in certain entities. We've seen it in Europe, for example, and that's quite common. You've got a peasant agriculture system there, and you've got in India as well. You know, that's not uncommon. So these 10,000 farmers have managed to tell their government that don't give New Zealand access. Now, we're getting a bit shitty about this. We've taken them to a disputes tribunal in the CPTPP and won that case. And Canada said, just no. So we're going to have another go at them. So, it's protectionist policies, and that's against the rules of free trade. The risk is in all of this that they might just exclude us, but Canada is risking throwing the whole world into chaos, because if we don't have rules-based trade, then no rules mean chaos.
Mm.
And Canada is starting to look like they're doing that. And I, you know, for the life of me, I've got a view of this. How can I say this? The first and only goal of a politician is to get elected. Doing good for the common man is a byproduct of them getting elected. And that's actually borne out in the documentary comedy called Yes Minister.
great show.
And I always look at that, and I've learnt some lessons. I once had a true story where I had a problem with a particular council I was working with, and a certain person wanted to do a certain thing, and I said, I knew if I said yes, they'd do it. If I said no, they would do it. So I said, that's very courageous of you. And they didn't do it. So politicians don't do courageous. That's the first thing to remember about politicians,
okay,
because it means votes.
Yeah.
But Canada is coming into that light of bending to the votes, as Europe has done too. So let's not single out Canada. But we've got over the Europeans a bit. We've got a free trade agreement with them now, which is working not the way many New Zealand, a lot of New Zealanders would like it to work, but it's working, and that's pretty hot. But the Canadians now are really going to, there's the words flying around from the ministers are pretty strong, a cynical attitude. It's all those words are being chucked at them, but it's impervious. They're impervious to reality. They just won't do it. So what will happen there? I don't know. That's that bit.
Interesting. So we'll find out more about
that. Yeah, well, that'll take place. I mean, I don't know what'll happen after that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Now, we've got time for one more? Yes, we have.
Yes, we do.
Okay, quickly, Ahu Whenua, the Māori Trophy is going on this week. But there's a lovely little story, and that's lovely. We'll have a new winner this year of the Sheep and Beef. We'll have a new winner of the Māori Young Farmer of the Year. But there was one lovely piece. At the field days, I met this lovely couple, George and Pani Hopa. And George and Pani won the trophy back in 1967. And they came along with their medal that they won. They've got this beautiful picture of their medal. And it's just lovely to see them. They were just so proud of them. And what they did was, the lovely bit is, they've got a photo taken at the time of them being presented with the trophy. And it sits on their dresser in their bedroom. And they look at it every night.
Aww.
And they're so proud of it. So I think that's a nice way to sort of end a program, that these people, having won this thing way back in 1967, they're not the only ones. We get others who come along to the event. We're expecting about 800 people for the night. And that's not as big as last year. We had 950 last year, I think.
Wow.
I think it's 850 this year. But that's a real celebration of Māori agribusiness, agriculture, and it is one of the best events you'll ever go to in your life. It's unmissable to me. I wouldn't miss it for quids.
Of course you wouldn't.
And I can't imbibe at all. I've got to work, so I'm on low alcohol beer, no alcohol beer all night.
That's okay. Fine. You get all the stories then.
I can remember what happened last
exactly.
night.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's a nice way to end, eh?
What do you reckon? That is nice. That's really nice. Yeah, that's cool. Great. Thank you so much for coming in.
Always fun.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.